Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I know things. For instance, there are 108 beads in a Catholic rosary and there are 108 stitches in a baseball. When I learned that, I gave Jesus a chance. But it just didn't work out between us. The Lord laid too much guilt on me. I prefer metaphysics to theology. You see, there's no guilt in baseball, and it's never born.
Yeah, what do you think of Pokey?
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, and this is episode 620. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. He will never forget that time he got strapped to a bed and was forced to listen to Walt Whitman Dunaway.
Oh, not only will I never forget it, I'll savor it every day. Oh, hi. Reminder, this intro reflects the nature of the content we consumed. A rated R F-bomb-laced sexual romp? You have been warned. Now, this week on Film Sack, we snort, blow, and bitch like a bull smashed in the nut bag with a home run hitter from the infield of the streaming service formerly known as HBO Max, where we are left with our mouths agape and eyes staring at this late 80s action sports comedy drama set in Durham, North Carolina, with the softcore porn of more Tim Robbins butt than I ever cared to see, minor league meat heat aimed right up Susan Sarandon's Bermuda Triangle of Seasonal Love, only to discover catcher Crash Costner already lost and squatting up in that business and calling all the pitches and showing deuces at the theater of the crotch. Is he shaking me off? Here comes the heat. Anywho, hey, listen, lady, I don't compete for love because I believe in the soul, the man junk, the lady junk, the rights of a woman to have a tramp stamp without being criticized. Condoms, Wheaties after long making love making sessions. Condoms again. I believe that the poems of Walt Whitman are self-indulgent, overrated crap that I absolutely love. Now, tie me up and let's hear it. Also, I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing little tiny underwear for men. I believe in the sweet spot. I also believe that you believe that there's a G-spot. Is it here? No. Here? No. Shit. And finally, I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last for like 3 minutes tops. Anything else is a dental exam. Randy, towel me off. I'm going to the show.
Strong ending. Nicely done.
Strong ending.
I'd like to thank you for not saying the show 17 times.
Oh, you are welcome. I'm going to the show, baby.
You were the show? What was the show like? You were the show?
Yeah, you got the show. Also with us, Randy, he always hits that huge ball. Sorry, I did that wrong. He always hits that huge bowl in the face in center field, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Brian. Randy.
Everyone, get into the shower together because that's something that would happen. And, you know, grown men all would rush to get into a gang shower room together if you told them to, right? No. I'm your stereotypical coach, Nathan Arizona, and you're my stereotypical team of misfits and baby men who each have sports team specific archetypes, like the grizzled veteran and the dumb rookie and the player with anger management issues and the other player with anger management issues, and me, the coach with anger management issues. Damn it. Now we're going to stop this losing streak right now, because that's what terrible teams do, right? Always. Yeah. They're terrible teams. Always just stop the losing streak. And we're going to accomplish that via three easy steps. Number one, no more sex. I understand that you're so oversexed that we have to put your wives in a section labeled players' wives while your mistresses sit above the home dugout and text you sex notes. It's got to stop. Number two, talk it out. Apparently, we're playing a sport where you can call timeout all you want and just stand around and talk while the other team and the umpires and the crowd waits for you to decide to resume. Mm-hmm. Number three, it's all psychological, isn't it? You think this sport is about throwing a thing to a person by hitting it with a stick into a net or past a base or into an end zone or something? I'm here to tell you, no. You win by clearing your mind and by studying Sun Tzu or some shit and by stopping having sex. You're doing it right there in front of me. Stop it. I'm a mad older man. Now dry off and get celibate.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Hell yeah.
We all had to dry off. Yeah. Nice.
After that movie. With us finally, Brian, they call him Artificial Rain Delay Ibbot.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Just fire up the hoses. Yeah. Hey, how about this one that I was saving for just this song that I was saving for just a movie like this? You guys ready?
Yep.
Here we go.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I was hired to help the pitcher. He was a big stupid oaf. Had a great arm for throwing, but a brain like a slice of marble loaf. So when Annie was deciding which one of us she would bet, I stopped and thought for a moment, then turned to her and I said, if you like softcore porno and presents on Christmas Day, if you're not into Sontag or AstroTurf where we play, if you think Oswald and a team of guys who blew off Kennedy's head, then I'm the player that you've looked for. Quit playing games, let's go to bed. I shortened up the instrumental tremendously. Well, she decided I was too rude and Nuke was an easier play. I even think she was considering that the two of them might marry someday. But my disinterest was a turn on. This is a rom-com, you see. Enough of the will they or won't they. She stopped and this is what she said to me. Yes, I like softcore porno and presents on Christmas Day, but you're wrong about Sontag. I'll read her any day. I'll take you up on 3-day kisses and show you how I get kicks. Ditch the rest of those lollygaggers and make six more baseball flicks.
There you go.
Love it. Fantastic. Oh, God.
Wow. Your bits where you got to harmonize with yourself and then do that whole thing. That's really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
I always love
that. That's a high harmony too, by the way. It's not it's not just a two step. It is like, it's like an octave and a two step. It's crazy.
That's a lot. Well done as usual. Again, I can't wait for the album. It's going to be fantastic. We are talking about the film Bull Durham from 1988. And I would like to let fake not Scott Fletcher explain more.
Bull Durham! Crash is an aging minor league ball player, brought up from another team to mature a young pitcher with maturity problems. Both of them become involved with Anne, a baseball groupie with her own perspective on the game. This thing is full of baseball and sex things. Strap in and get ready, suckers.
Yeah, there you go.
I love how it always screams at the top of it.
IMDb sure had some weird stuff to the end of its synopsis.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened recently, but they keep doing it. It's Bull Durham. This is a movie I remember when it came out. It was like a cultural or was a reviewer's darling. Everybody loved it. Oh, raving yeah. about
People
it.
People loved the shit out of this
All they
movie.
Talked about. Yeah.
I don't remember that aspect. That's very
really.
Oh, yeah, I do. Totally Jeez, do. It was yeah. crazy. Everybody who was anybody in reviews was like just all over themselves.
Okay, I'm going to go with Randy on that. Actually, Randy, I'm going to agree with you. I wasn't hearing a lot of buzz with my movie friends, but I knew that the boomers loved this movie. I knew that the older folks loved
it. Yeah, it wasn't
movie.
So much the boomers or the, you know,
and
the
that's not a pejorative. I'm not trying to bash on
was,
boomers. I'm just saying
was
that
critics,
was
like critics lavished this thing.
Right. Yeah,
like,
that's what I
But they were all of that age groups, right?
Well, I see that. I without a doubt, like if you go look it up on Rotten Tomatoes, it's like what were they what wow. It just like I don't remember that being the case at the time. I was a kid. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. I have a friend who's like 3 years older than me, but has been the greatest generation type person his entire life. He's like an old. He was old when soul. We were kids.
Yeah.
Like he's one of these people, and he loved this movie so much and quoted it so much that I actually thought I'd seen it. I've never seen it until yesterday.
Oh, wow. That's your first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I really genuinely thought I'd seen this movie because this friend of mine had quoted it to me for 20 years.
Sure.
This movie was supposed to be at the time, right? It was supposed to take place during modern times.
Durham, North Carolina, but 1988. Was, yeah, sure.
Right, but this movie was making some sweet, sweet love to the 50s and that generation's youth. I mean,
well, and our ideas of the South, right? Like,
right.
It might not really matter where you set this movie because it really doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. But those settings, man, I recognized everything. I'm like, oh, I feel like I've been down that street. Oh, there's that. That's too shot totally down there at Durham.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. Have you lived around Greenwood your whole life, or
correct?
Have you been? Okay.
Well, so. I was born on a military base, and then we moved mostly in the same area in South Carolina for the most part, besides a few little visits to New Hampshire and to Phoenix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were born in a tube in the base, right? You were part of an experiment.
I was born from I was the first baby to survive. We were at Camp Lejeune. My mom had lost several babies, including my older brother, who actually made it for a while. And then I was fed on that tainted water in my bottle. So sweet.
Yeah.
No repercussions there.
No, none. You're fine.
None whatsoever.
So yeah. I have questions. So you've been in South Carolina your whole life.
Yes.
And the rest of us, like especially out here west, we always think that North Carolina and South Carolina are really more attached to each other than most states that border each other.
Right.
So like,
right.
Like when you just like look from a distance and you have a history of like there's a minor league baseball team in Columbia and there's one in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and there's one up in Greensboro and so forth.
Right. Right.
We just assume you just know all those places and you just
absolutely. I do know all those places. They're all within your little trips. It's like, oh, well, I can make it to this place or I can make it to that place within 1 to 2 hours. So absolutely. As far as places to visit, and I've been to North Carolina many times. However, is there a shared love? I mean, we share a football team together, NFL football team, the Carolina Panthers, but, there's definitely
out of Charlotte, right?
Right. Right. But there's definitely a difference between North Carolinians and South Carolinians.
For sure. I just watching this movie, I would just get this feeling because like they're just like they're not just saying, you know, there's a team out in Wilmington and there's a team down in Charleston. They're like naming towns that sound small. You know?
Yes.
But part of what makes the movie work for me and the reason I think it holds up and is still good is because the leaning into the southern atmosphere of it all, and making it feel you know, it's like it's set in an older time than it actually is to its benefit. Like my favorite people in the entire movie are probably the two play-by-play and shot caller dudes that are all the games doing all the radio.
Yeah.
I love
like
those
the ones
guys.
Making the sound effects and then hitting the button.
Like it. Yeah. I've never thought about it, but they used to do those. You would hear the bat hit and you would think, oh, you wouldn't think of where it'd come from, but seeing that guy do it was kind of hilarious.
Yeah. This was a year that had a couple of critical darlings. So that was one of them. The other one that everybody that every critic had to love was Mississippi Burning that year. Also Midnight Run, which I actually think is a lot. It's in this wheelhouse. It's a totally different
kind
of movie.
It's a tour of small towns, right?
Yeah. Not even so much that. It's that kind of humor. It's like you know, hard R, lots of swears.
Oh yeah.
But funny, but
God, that movie is so great.
Oh, I love Midnight Run. It holds up too. Yeah.
So like for me, Scott, what I kept noticing in this movie was that Susan Sarandon's character is like, I guess she's like a junior professor, a part-time professor at Duke or something. They never actually said Duke, but it's just,
they didn't say Duke. Yeah. She just said that she's a part-time professor at some college.
Yeah. Nearby, like it's implied, right? Like,
right. Right.
It's the only thing Durham has going on from my perspective, but like, she's just like, that's all she does. And she, sleeps with, minor league baseball players.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she
lives as a public service.
She lives in the nicest house I've ever seen. And
yeah.
Right. I'm just like, how does this? Okay,
that house actually would be pretty consistent. You know, when you live in these smaller towns, you can totally get a huge house for much less than you could in a city. That's kind of just how it is. So
in the 80s, sure.
Yeah, it just seemed like she didn't do much other than, you know, sleep with players. Though it feels like her job was.
Well, once again, like I said, I think that was a public service. She just loved baseball. She felt like she did it for love
of the game. Is what she's saying?
Yeah. Well, she said that baseball, it's her religion, and you know, she's a servant of the Church of Baseball. So she's just, you know, trying to make sure everything is going good, right?
That was a crazy year, you guys. Just real quick, sorry, before I close this tab, I at least need to share this. Die Hard, Rain Man.
it was an amazing year, wasn't it?
Beetlejuice, Akira, Big, Naked Gun, Fish Called Wanda, good Lord. Coming to America. Mention those others. Let's see. They Live was that year. Willow was that year. Like,
oh, I love
Heathers,
so
Dangerous Liaison, Scrooge, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Last Temptation to Christ. That's a memorable year of films.
Yeah, it is. And it's a lot of, some of those were lower budget films. It's kind of like this one. Orion was doing a lot of stuff at this time. They picked up Bull Durham. A lot of people passed on it because it just didn't seem like it could make any money.
Mm-hmm.
But that was proven wrong. They did really well. Amazing year though.
Yeah,
what year was this again? It was 88.
It was
right?
A good year. Yeah. Decent year for films. It's funny, that's the same year as Eight Men Out. So another big baseball movie.
Another baseball thing.
They talk a bunch in the trivia about how the baseball movies were sucking it. And everybody was having trouble getting this thing sold, and no one thought baseball was a sellable thing. And it went so well that it not only spawned Eight Men Out got way more greenlit after the box office success of this thing. But the very next year we got, You Build It, We'll Come. What is it? The Field of Dreams.
Yeah, Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams after that. And then there was something else after that. I mean, The Natural.
There's
was
a
like
whole
6
generation of people who think they can start a business based on that, by the way, because of that whole stupid saying.
I know, right? Everyone uses it all the time. It's like, hey, we're putting an arcade in the mall. Oh, well, if you build it, they will come. It's like, shut up.
Yeah.
That does not make a successful business.
I want to argue that a little tiny bit, because I feel like you're throwing a ton of shade on the baseball movies that come before this, like Bad News Bears and Bang the Drum Slowly and The Natural, and especially The Natural.
There's no shade on them. It's that they weren't considered bankable. That's all. They're good movies. All of them.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. No, you know how Hollywood is. They're weird. They're like, really, base, you know, or hockey or whatever it is. They Westerns for a while, nobody would touch them, even though there were plenty of good Westerns you could point at and say, well, what about this one? Well, it doesn't matter. We're just not making any money. It's like that.
So I was made to watch The Natural as a kid.
Oh, sit down, son.
My first Barry Levinson movie. I realized 30 years later that my mom had such a thing for Robert Redford. And I just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah,
no, I still do. What are you talking about?
My mom's same. They're just so hardcore about that guy.
He
was there. I don't know.
Have you seen him? He's gorgeous.
He was their Brad Pitt or their George Clooney or whatever.
A little leathery, but you know.
And you know, now I understand why my mom taught me to groom my hair this way. And just so many things. But that's actually a really good movie.
Yeah,
absolutely. Awesome.
I scratch my head a little bit about Bull Durham being the sort of the follow-up baseball movie to The Natural, because it's very different.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. The writer and director, Ron Shelton, who really pushed to get this thing made, had so much experience being around this stuff. That's what he was doing. And so it's real genuine, even though it's Walt Whitman level of romanticism for it. Mm-hmm. I've seen it before, but I kind of waved it off as, you know, older generation kind of film. And I watched it, And there's certainly parts of it that I really can appreciate now more than I did back then. But once again, I was still blown away with, wow, is this softcore porn? I mean, if I see if I see one more butt, I'm just, I don't know.
Doing it in the bathtub and splashing all the candles that must have taken hours to set up.
Oh, they are the messiest.
I thought Porky's was bad. This may, you know, it may challenge Porky's for his soft porn.
Sure. Title, it's a little more highbrow, I think. But yeah.
Right.
Like there's the thing I was most struck with is how messy everybody is about their love making. Like it's like, hey, I'm getting a little horny after these Wheaties. I could just put my bowl to the side and we could just, you know, go somewhere decent. But no, I'm going to throw my bowl into the sink and break it.
Right.
I'm going to dump.
Happens after the fire dies? And I kind of want to know what happens with these two characters after the fire dies, because I mean, this is sex fueled.
They spend the next 3 days cleaning up the kitchen with the milk all over the place. And seriously, ants, I'm sure they've got to be all over that.
Roaches down there. You get roaches.
I was hoping that meat was on the front of the Wheaties box, but I don't know if they just get a chance to play that off, because they kept implying that maybe he could end up on the Wheaties box or something. Oh, and having sex and eating his Wheaties.
Many potential stories that didn't get told here. Right. I actually want to argue that we should be giving credit to Ron Shelton and the cinematographer. Absolutely. Cinematographer's name is Bobby Byrne. We've seen the three previous Bobby Byrne filmed movies. That would be Howard the Duck, 16 Candles, and crucially, Smokey and the Bandit. He was the cinematographer for that. And I want to give him credit, because I actually think when you come away from a movie and you remember that shot of them knocking over the milk and it's spilling right next to them while they're getting it on.
Yeah.
When you remember that, that's good photography. Like that's really
good.
You know?
Yeah. I wonder how many times it took them. You know, you got to dump the milk eight times, eight different takes or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. But I just
thought whatever stuff. Yeah,
right.
I think they just take however stuff falls down, you just take it.
Yeah. Right.
You know, leave the milk open so that you can hopefully get that in there too. But you might get a box of Wheaties that spills out towards them as they're doing it or whatever. But
I think that's, and it's really good, because I think Ron Shelton, from what I read, what the special features I saw on the VHS tape, Ron Shelton just kind of like let everybody just happen, right? They got real ball players from the minor league in there. That Costner was, you know, even when they weren't filming him, he was doing baseball stuff. And it was just like, let's just capture everything. Let's just capture all the moments. And I think like Randy said, that we got a great cinematographer here that just did it.
Again, it could have taken place in a lot of different places, and it doesn't change the fundamentals of the film. Mm-hmm. But the cinematography is about these long establishing shots, and too many of them, honestly. The movie felt a little slow, like a baseball game.
Right.
And it felt a little slow.
Act especially, yeah.
And and it's because they're so determined for you to see Durham at night for some reason. Yeah. shots. It's good video, at least.
I appreciate it as someone who lives more local to this stuff. I really felt at home. I was amazed. Like when I watched this when I was younger, I just, you know, didn't even hit me at all. But this time around, I was like, oh man, I know that little place. No, that's just way cool.
It nailed the location, I think, pretty well. I also think
just
the overall,
like, just like Meat did to. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, very nice.
nailed it.
The overall tone of the movie, I think, worked pretty well for me anyway, because Ron Shelton was also a former minor league baseball player, and I think you know, his experience showed up here, and you could feel that. Like, what was it really like in those locker rooms? What was that banter like? Like, that felt real to me. Didn't feel made up. I thought, who's the guy that plays Arliss on HBO?
Robert Wool.
Yeah, he's your second in command.
I love Robert Wool in this movie.
He's great in this. Just always, he's so stoked, dude. He's got enough tobacco to, start a fire. He's constantly doing that. the chatter thing you do when you're in baseball. He was a highlight.
And his delivery is probably the best part of that. He's the punchline of that discussion on the field, all the players coming in and talking about, well, we need to cut off the head of a rooster for him. His dad's in the audience, so he's all nervous. And we're trying to figure out what to get Millie and whoever for their...
I love that was an aspect of a minor league coach. I loved I just love
that. And so again, I haven't seen the movie, but I have sure heard Robert Wool talk about that scene in every interview he's given for 30 years.
Right.
He loves that he was allowed to ad lib, and like he believes he came in and you know, he gave them the take that they ended up using in the film.
Right.
He's very, very proud of
that. Oh, they 100% did. Yeah. I thought that was great. That whole bit, that's the crux of the film. It's where the humor comes from. It's not slapstick. It's not, I don't even know what you call it. It's like
it's genuine humor, right? It's heartfelt, genuine humor.
Yeah. And even though it's kind of, I don't know, there are times where it's like, you could say, well, that's immature humor. That joke was, you know, whatever. But it felt the people saying it would say it, you know? It didn't feel forced. Right. Didn't feel like somebody was saying something they wouldn't say in the context they were saying it in.
What I want to ask, and again, this my problem here is that I've seen so many fantastic sports films over the years. They all came after this one. So I'm trying to forget that. But my question is, what's the plot of this movie? What are the stakes and why do we care?
It plays so heavy as a love triangle. And so I don't know. Is this really with like flavors of baseball?
Yeah, it's funny because you, from the outside, you could look at this and say, oh, it's a rom-com that happens to have some baseball in it, or it's a baseball movie that happens to have some romance in it. And it really isn't. It is a baseball and a rom-com kind of equal parts. And so your stakes are,
here's a love like baseball. I mean, it's got the balls and the bats and
you're trying to get to home base. But you've got, you know, the stakes are that you want Crash to be successful in turning Nuke into a good pitcher. But you also want him to be less jaded and find love.
The thing is, it's set in a AAA team where it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if Costner completely fails with Nuke. Nuke is going to leave either way.
Yeah, Nuke is out.
And
yeah.
Like you said, it was a love triangle. I have never read a book or seen a movie about a love triangle where none of the three people really cared whether or not they end up with any of the other people.
right.
I've never seen that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm asking, what are the stakes here? Like they're really passionate when they're making out, but they don't really care. Like the instant Nuke gets to go to Tampa or wherever, like he's out, he's gone.
Yeah,
he doesn't even have a parting shot. You know,
that's the hallmark of the Will there, won't they? They have to act like they don't care. I think you get the very genuine response from Sarandon when she, you know, she and Costner are having that fight and she kicks over the ironing board and just says, I want you. And he like again rebuffs her and turns her down, and I think that's when you get the most genuine moment of, oh yeah, she really does care, and it's not just like a, ooh, he said some pretty things about the designated hitter rule and the you know long wet deep slow.
This is usually easy for her, right? Like the whole concept is that she's got no problem dancing around town with whatever the hot boy of the team is at the moment, and then now it's not working. He's got. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you call them standards, but he has standards that are based on, I'm not just going to get pushed around. He showed it with the coaches. He showed it with the team. He showed it with Nuke.
Why
and he showed
I
it with her.
Decide?
He even showed it in the end by showing up again. He quit on his own terms. Once again, he quits on his own terms. Right. There's something about that that drives the whole movie. I think
they're playing a little bit with seasons of life, right? In this, they didn't play it heavy handed or anything, but there's definitely like they're all moving on to the next season of their life. By the end of this is one last hurrah. This is just one last intersection. Mm-hmm. It's like a winning season in a baseball team, right? This everything comes together and it plays well. And once that is over, it's a rebuilding year. And
that's a really good point. Cause like Millie ending up with the Christian guy.
Right.
Is a version of that. It's a version. It's subtle, right? Like they're actual characters and stuff. It's not a theme, but it feels themey because when that happens, where this girl who is really gets around, they make a point of that, is now going to end up with this guy who is the very polar opposite of that. It's a change in seasons. It's like a moment of, oh, right. None of this lasts forever. All your glory days, all your expectations for yourself as a ball player or as someone who's, you know, sleeping with all the ball players, whatever your goals are, They change because time happens, age happens. I mean, hell, when they made this movie, Tim Robbins was 30. Kevin Costner was 33.
We haven't talked about Tim Robbins' performance here, by the way.
And Sarandon was 42.
Yeah. Like, you know, they're getting on for what they are and who they're supposed to be in this thing. In her case, she's, you know, she's not young and, you know, sultry like she used to be.
Chicken anymore.
Right. And in their case, you're not going to play Major League Baseball for much longer if you don't get your ass into the majors at 30 or you're screwed. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. That's the thing I think I take away from it back then and now is this feeling of change of like, here's how it is right this second. However, what are we doing to be ready for what's next? And none of them are quite ready.
I understand that Tim Robbins was 30, but his character, Ebi LaLouche, is like 21. What,
22, 21, something like that. He's very young.
Perfectly. I feel like he acts circles around Kevin Costner in this movie. And I just loved everything about his portrayal. He was so into this character. You could tell. Like, he really got, like, it's such a the trope of the new pitcher with control issues. Oh my God. It's been in every movie that ever was made, included a baseball. And he just nails it. He is the trope maker.
He's pretty great. And I would not say Kevin was bad. I would say, though, that when Kevin Costner and Tim Robbins were in the same scenes together, Kevin Costner's performance elevated. He was better going against Tim.
Very
Robbins.
Good chemistry, right?
For sure, for sure.
But what if we had gotten Anthony Michael Hall in that Tim?
Yeah, it was supposed to be
It was supposed to be the studio wanted Anthony Michael Hall.
Thank God we didn't. Yeah. I mean, I love him, but that would have totally messed with the dynamic.
Well, hold on though, because in '88 you're talking about the one that was in Edward Scissorhands, and he's an older buffer. Yeah, I think
would he be able to play? He doesn't feel like he can play.
I love. By the way, I'm full stop. I love Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh,
I just don't think this would have been right for this.
No, he. I don't think he can play like Nuke works because Tim Robbins is an idiot that doesn't know he's an idiot, and I don't think Anthony Michael Hall would be able to play an idiot that
he seems very smart. Right,
that's a decent
Tim Robbins can play dumb as dirt.
He really can.
Well, it's a good thing that Ron Shelton, the creator, the writer, and director, said, "I'm walking from this project unless you pick who I wanted, which was Tim Robbins." And so they relented and did it. But you know,
it was the right choice,
especially given Tim Robbins' hulking size. Like he comes across as such a baby man. And I just love that the first time we see him, we're looking at him buck naked from behind. Yeah. He is just carrying a woman. This little woman has climbed him like a tree.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it is so freaking funny.
If you ever wanted some comparison to how tall people are in Hollywood. So he is towering in this movie over everyone. Yeah. He's a very tall man. In Silo, he was very tall compared to all the other actors. I am literally his height. So the point of that is to point out that Hollywood is mostly little tiny people.
Average height people.
Yeah, because Kevin, I wouldn't have ever said Kevin Costner's a short guy, but compared to Tim Robbins, he's a little tiny guy.
And I just looked up the actress that he's holding up. She's 5'5".
Yeah. Well, and also, coincidentally, we were talking about Reno 911 and another movie starring Thomas Lennon. Those two are married. Thomas Lennon.
Oh, what? Plays Millie. Oh, my gosh. Also, the movie we're watching next week is from the same year this came out. So I don't know what's going on with 1988 and people's
1988 is having a moment in our brains.
I guess so.
Right? Yeah. How many years would that be now? That's a even number, right? Or five number, right? Let's see. What is that?
You got me.
40s, 45.
So it would be an anniversary.
Oh, go 35 years. Yeah.
So he is six years away. Tim Robbins is 6 years away from Andy Dufresne, just for a reference.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Not too long. I don't think.
You know, Kevin Costner still has boyish good looks in this one, too. You know, he still
has. I mean, he has them. And he, I mean, you look at him now and he's still an attractive man, but
he's so imposing.
Gina and I both agreed that he's much better looking now or aged better than he looks in this film.
Yeah, I agree.
He's also become a much better actor. Like every time he had to do serious acting in this movie, and it was mostly against Susan Sarandon, he was having to like have chemistry and be romantic. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, yes, there is a choice here to play this character as aloof. I get that. But I just feel like, oh man, I wish I had the modern Costner that he would become as an actor.
Yeah, I bought her passion toward him. I didn't buy his passion toward her. And part of it, that surprises me, because this is Susan Sarandon meeting Tim Robbins on set. This is where they met.
Right.
Yeah. And they got married for a long time after that.
But that kind of makes sense for the character, though, right? It kind of plays well, even if the chemistry is, maybe it kind of worked.
Well, I think by the end, you want it to be like certain, right? You want it to be like, they're really going to knock this milk over and go for it. And
yeah.
And I never quite bought that he was as into her as she is into him. I did at the end, though, because when he shows up on the porch.
That's when it's supposed to happen, because up to that point, he's still wrapped up in his romanticism of what things should be. You know, he still thinks he should be in the show, even though he can't accept the fact he's already done amazing things, being the, you know, making more home runs than anybody in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
He still can't accept that.
Randy is correct that I think this is almost irrefutable. I think Kevin Costner just gets better as time goes on.
Yeah. He's like a milk that's on the floor. He gets better.
He's the opposite of the milk.
Right.
He ages well. And like the milk on the floor, but
I'll tell you, no one's as good as Max, the clown prince of baseball.
Oh yeah. That guy's great.
Yeah. Is he responsible for the thing that grossed Get Out the most, or was it the chest hair?
There's only one.
Please insist.
Right.
Yes. I have to insist that Susan Sarandon licking both men on their hair on their skin,
hairy nipple
has
chest
to be the thing.
Well, there's not even a question. How could you even be anything else?
Well, let's do this.
Gross.
So here is, I had to make a bit of a list. All right. Yeah. Because there were some things that really threw me.
I believe in what grossed me out the most. I believe in
you guys, you totally nailed it. I don't want to lick anyone's hairy belly to chest anytime ever. Okay. No. Ever. Forget it. So that's gross in its own way. But here's the other things that got me. Spitting chew in the Coke bottle on the bus. Our listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Freaking gross.
I'm so desensitized to that. I am
not me.
I'm so desensitized to that.
All I could think of was Brian's old roommate. It's gross me out.
Yeah. Oh, God. Mountain Dew.
Then there was spitting. The ump and Costner yelling at each other so close that I could see the spit hitting each other in the face.
You could just draw a circle around a dozen things where people spit in a baseball game. Yep. There was so much spit.
Yeah, but I think there is a difference between the clown prince of baseball spitting straight up into the air and then that cloud that, you know, some of the heavier droplets are coming right back down.
Oh, it's
face.
Very gross. Yeah, there's no question about that. The other thing that got me is that made me never want Kevin Costner to go hang out with her again. When she's doing the cleanup, she finds an old cigarette butt and decides that's clean enough from the floor to light it up and sit there for a while and smoke it.
Why not?
Gross. Why not? Gross. This movie had a lot of gross.
That's her floor, though. You know, it's a floor.
It's her floor. She knows whether she's...
You can smoke a cigarette butt off of it.
Yeah, you can slurp. You can slurp milk off the floor. It's delicious. Yeah.
The only thing that I didn't make the list that should have is all the sax music. I freaking hated that. But
I love the sax music. I loved it only because it reminded me every 5 seconds that I was watching a movie from the 80s that involved romance and sex. I don't know
because the rest of some of the other soundtrack bits were fine. I'm not a big fan of. What's his name's put me in coach. I'm ready to play. I can't think of his name.
But of course they're going to use that. How do you not play that in this movie?
Dude,
I can't think of his name though. Mahagerty. No.
Mahagerty.
No, but it's something like that. It is,
something.
Oh my God.
Gaggerty.
Why is
so much fun.
Guy's name.
Gaggerty.
Oogity. 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 Haggerty.
Fogarty.
When are we going to watch Tim Cup, the sister to this film? When are we going to watch Kevin Costner get on with Russo? When are we going to watch Tin Cup?
Yeah, well, that's same. I'd love to watch Tin Cup.
Same director, same writer.
Yeah. When are we going to watch the sister show to this one? We got to see it.
He made another one of those, basically. It really is very similar. I like that one because Cheech Marin's in it. That one's a good one.
Yeah. No brain.
Big fan of the old Cheech.
That came out in the season of golf movies. These things come in groups.
It's hard to say which ones really drive them, but like, you know, would League of Their Own, would a League of Their Own happen without the success of this and Eight Men Out and Field of Dreams and all that? I don't know. Maybe it would.
It's a really good. Yeah. Major League very, very next year. And I don't know if I would have went to, I don't know. I wasn't necessarily enamored with baseball at the time, so I can't say.
I'm a giant nerd for baseball movies, and I don't even follow regular season play, but I've seen, I've said this before, but I've seen Ken Burns' documentary, which is 18 hours long plus the extra inning stuff, if you count those.
Good.
I know, and I've watched that thing four times over. That's 18 hours times four. You do the math. That's a lot of documentary about a sport that I'm completely enamored with it.
Dozens of hours. It's dozens of hours.
So when I see a movie, like that's why I love The Natural so much, because it to me captured the mysticism of baseball. Because there is a certain mythology. Oh,
let's speak of the let's speak of the mysticism in this one when we have a guy with some chicken bones on his.
That's a trope.
It's a trope.
Yeah, that was a good, pretty good trope. Does it have a name?
You got a Dominican. You got a Dominican, you're going to get some voodoo. Oh,
and they slam it. They just slam it all the way to the home run within in Major League, right? They do that over the top.
Much more. Yeah, much more in Major League. Holy cow.
What has the most, what sport has the most superstition? Might be baseball.
Most, I think baseball is absolutely, I mean, other sports too, but baseball is known for its superstition. Right.
They it gets played on a lot, I feel like.
It's a long, slow game until last year. And it's like, seriously, you know, right? You all, you've all heard.
The two hour limit.
So, but it's a long, slow game. It's got a ton of people who don't participate in any given game, right? Like the funny thing in this movie is they act like the team has no other pitchers, and actually, in real life, you carry two or three pitchers in the minor leagues, and like your pitcher, your starter is like sitting around for days and days. You know, like of course they're going to generate their own little religions and practices, right?
Yeah. It makes sense to me. It feels like maybe another one would be, well, gambling's not a sport, but you know, anything where there's like a lot of chance involved.
I mean, if you count stuff like World Series of Poker, I'd say there's a ton of superstition there.
Yeah.
But I think out of your big sports, your true sports, I think is your
true sports. Oh, the gauntlet has been thrown down.
True sports.
Well, let somebody bitch at me that World Series of Poker is a true sport. I'll take that.
Yeah, you'll take that argument. Sure.
He's doubling down.
I just want to acknowledge that that's a really fun discussion. What's the difference between a sport and a game?
Yeah,
need to have it here. I'm just saying that's a fun discussion.
No, it is. Okay. That's
I don't find it fun at all.
They've been trying to make that argument about the esports for years and whether or not it's got the level of an actual sport.
It basically boils down to this. It does it require athletic skill? That's where most people draw the difference between a sport and a game, right? That's kind of where it comes.
Yeah. As far as, by the way, people that were up for the Nuke LaRouche role, and by the way, he doesn't need a nickname. Just call him Nuke, which y'all
Everybody gets a nickname.
His nickname is Nuke.
Yeah,
this is before ESPN and Chris Berman really made nicknames a really common thing. Yeah, remember those days?
Chris Berman
gave a nickname to everybody.
That's fun.
I love Chris Berman. He hasn't done anything to make me mad, has he? Let me take my shirt. Okay, go ahead.
If your first name was Ebby, he would have called you Ebby. He would have called you Flo because you would have been Ebby Flo.
Oh, Ebby Flo, sure.
Oh yeah, I could see that. I don't remember him doing that, but I guess I didn't.
Ebby Calvin LaLouche definitely needed a nickname.
there you go. But anyway, some other folks that were up for the job. So we talked about, what's his name? Anthony Michael Hall. That didn't happen. Kurt Russell actually helped develop the script, and they were buddies, him and Ron Shelton. And he was penciled in to play Crash. He was supposed to be the Kevin Costner role, but got bombed with other stuff, got too busy, whatever. Ended up going to Kevin Costner. And Russell was so impressed after he wrote fan letters to both Costner and Sheldon telling them how much he liked it. According to the trivia, I don't know if this is true, but that's what it says. Mm-hmm. The other people, Jeff Bridges and Don Johnson, turned down the role of Crash.
Yeah. I can see Don Johnson always has been visually, physically a stand-in for me for Kevin Costner. I don't necessarily think that
interesting.
Physically. They seem similar to me. I'm not saying their acting is anywhere near the same.
Well, you could see if you put those two guys in, stand them next to each other for Django, and you said, all right, one of you is going to be this mean old plantation owner, you could probably pull it off with either one of them. They ended up doing Johnson, but I know what you're saying. There's something about him where they could be interchangeable. Charlie Sheen was supposedly up for the Nuke LaRouche role, But he was already,
then that would be bad. That would ruin his chances for major league.
Well, he was already an eight man out that year, same year. So,
oh, that's right.
Yeah, he would have done three back to back baseball movies, and that would have been weird.
Oh, typecast Charlie Sheen, mm-hmm. the baseball guy.
Maybe he needed that in his life. I don't know.
Maybe he did. Little anchor.
Yeah, a little something to hold him down. You know, yeah. Keep him from mm-hmm. snorting coke off of nipples and things like that.
And his, you know, Charlie Sheen. It's real easy to look at again other movies that come later and go, well, you could have really done something in Bull Durham. But like the point of this movie, it seems like it's not got a lot hanging on the bones. And so like, you know what I'm saying? Like this couldn't have been about a major league team and major league movement for guys. Right. Right. Like right. It needed to be about a small team and a small crowd where a woman could meet all the players. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
There's this stuff about this movie that makes it really, you know, I hate to use the word small over and over because it's not like it. There are some expansive aspects,
right? Right.
It's, but it's small, supposed to be small.
Yeah,
right?
It's because small to its benefit, I think.
Yeah, but it's not the major league. It's not the show, right? It's supposed to be that. It's supposed to be small. Everything.
Yeah, and the fact that he gets called up. Is also kind of small because it's only because of some expansion team and it's a half season thing. Like it's not even a full blown the next big MLB star is rising out of Durham, North Carolina. Right. It's not like that. It's just like, hey, we got a spot to fill. Seems like you got a good arm. You've improved this year.
Yeah, will he be able to make it, or will he be just a repeat of Crash? Will he basically live the same life?
Right, and they even gave us the clue that he's still just stupid and irritating and. You know, the way he's picking up on the reporter lady, it's just like talking about Motley Crue songs. It's like, he's still an idiot. And I don't know. I like the smallness. I like that about it.
Yeah, I do too. And the thing I wrote after the movie ended is the one thing that has really stuck with me as a question. And that is, why the hell is this called Bull Durham? How is that completely different than if I said, hey, I got a script here, and my movie's going to be called Astro Houston. You'd be like, okay, right. I need you to explain that to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
why not? I always thought it was the titular character is what I thought before I saw it.
Like the character was named Bull Durham. I thought the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's the Durham Bulls. What the frick?
They never explain it. And it's like, I guess that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Right? Like if I actually got you to invest in and make a movie called Astro Houston and never explain the name, I'd be like, yeah, I pulled one over.
Gotcha, sucker.
Yeah.
A Durham of their own. A bull of their own.
A bull of their own. I like that.
A bull of their own.
That's pretty good.
How about this ain't porn? But it kind of is.
Well, my dude, that's funny you say that. My memory of it when I was 18 when I saw this?
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was wall to wall Susan Sarandon, Kevin Costner sex time. I really did. That was my memory of it. Wow. And so when I watched this, I was like, not only is it not that till the end, it's purposely not that. He's like avoiding her and he's playing hard to get. Like all these other things are going on. But in my memory, they were always licking each other's hairy chest. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why. Because I was 18.
That's how trauma feels, Scott.
That explains a lot, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
That explains a lot. I don't know. I just don't know if I'd marry a guy who can't just set his cereal bowl in the sink. It's just as reachable.
Yeah.
You don't have to go schling crash. Like, is that why he's called Crash? Because he throws his dishes around?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Trixie.
Yeah, right? Annoyed me, though.
Maybe he's roasting chicken bones
really
on that.
Really did. Yeah, really. Mm-hmm.
Tell them. I want to tell you a quick story about
that whole set. Hey, if you get a whole new set of the cereal bowls because you bought them as a four pack and then you only have three.
Right. Get to Walmart and get that done. Sorry, Randy. What? You have a story about who?
Tim Robbins. So he, you know, he falls in love with Susan Sarandon, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they don't. Maybe it's just this is where they met and they fell in love later. I don't know. But she's 12 years older than him.
Yeah.
And that's remarkable in Hollywood. That's cool.
Yeah.
We all kind of like feel like, oh, okay, it's good. That's a good thing, right?
Well, it's usually the opposite. It's usually DiCaprio and some 22-year-old. So,
right.
Yeah.
So then, it's fine.
Bringing balance to the force.
They're married for 15 years or something. And I want to fast forward to 2017.
Go.
In 2017, 58-year-old Tim Robbins married a woman named Graciela Brancusi, an actress from Greece.
Well, I wouldn't say that because I can't say that. That's a hard name to pronounce.
Right. Yeah, sure.
All right.
That's a, you've got some Robert Wool comedy going on here.
Right, yeah, right, really good.
2017. Guess so he was 58. I want you to guess how old Graciela Brancusi was when they got married in 28.
Yeah, just because we're talking to DiCaprio, I'm going to say 23.
Yep, you looked it up, didn't you?
Oh, did I? No. 28. That's perfect. Wild guess. That was the wild pitch that hit the mark.
Okay. He was 30 years her senior.
Wow.
Right. And now, for those of you who are approaching maybe an age like 58, I want you to imagine feeling as though you're physically responsible enough to enter marriage with someone.
Here's why it's really hard for me to grasp. It may have been easier when I was younger, but now it's not easy to grasp at all because I have kids who are, my middle daughter is 26. The idea of dating a 23-year-old sounds like the grossest thing I could attempt. It sounds horrible.
It also sounds like hell. And I want to know how did they meet? What was the and it's just because of the age difference.
Well, he played golf with her grandfather and
Look, there's definitely seasons in life. Right. We every decade to two decades, we as people shed our skins essentially and become different people who have different outlook on life. And you still have some core beliefs and stuff, but a lot of things changes. And when you start getting outside of that 15-year range, in my opinion, it starts getting a little bit weird because y'all haven't had the same experiences and you have less in common. So those quiet moments that aren't filled with passionate physical, you know, whatever, you have to have somebody you can have a conversation with on a daily basis where you can relate to each other. It's like, oh, being this age sucks because I hurt here now. And when you're trying to tell a 28-year-old that, they're like, whatever, old man. Yeah, I just don't. It's
what about when you're at the age where it hurts everywhere now,
right,
all the time?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't realize that he and Susan Sarandon didn't get married. That they were just partners.
So have I been saying Sarandon wrong? Because I've heard both of y'all say
I've been Sarandon. Saying Sarandon until I pulled up her Wikipedia page, and it's clearly Sarandon.
Yeah, Sarandon has
you're
been
Sarandon
correct
to me, and I will continue to say it. Wait for my Twitter post.
Did I get one right?
Susan
Saracen, like the kid from Friday Night Lights. Different sport, though. Different sport. Yeah.
You're saying I got one right?
I think you got it right.
All right. Here's the thing. You might have, but here's, I can't read these weird little weird characters. You know, I know my pronunciation guides and stuff, but these little weird characters on the Wikipedia page for Susan Sarandon.
Well, here's one that says this is supposed to be accurate. I'll play the audio. Let's see if this is it. I don't know if it's right.
Pronouncenames.com.
All right, here we go.
Susan Sarandon.
Okay.
Wait, there you go.
There's another one.
That's what he says. But
he
what
sounds
does that
like
mean?
It's a question, Susan though.
Sarandon. What the hell does that mean? Doesn't
it sounds
matter
like he's not sure.
Doesn't
correct
matter
pronunciation of your name.
Yeah, this is a bunch of people in here.
We are looking at the pronunciation of the actress.
Oh, I love it. The French guy who does the thing. I love
the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Thelma and Louise.
Oh, it says there are two pronunciations. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. So here's number one.
Susan Sarandon.
That's number one. This is number two.
Susan Sarandon.
Oh, that's just a lady.
All right.
Sarandon. I think it is Sarandon.
But you can say it any way you want to. I just thought it was odd that we had two people on the show that were saying that way. I'm like, maybe I'm the one that's wrong.
I said it Sarandon at the beginning of the show, and then after looking at, you know, after hearing Randy and looking at Randon and looking it up.
Randon, I'm going to start calling him Randon. I love it.
What is that AE symbol jammed together? What does that sound like? I know my schwa. I know my accent mark on the se. You know, we got the se. We know it's.
Yeah. And you know, she gets the name from Prince Humperdinck, right?
Right.
And so, you might want to ask how does he pronounce it? And then at that point, I don't care. So
I'd like to hear her say it. Oh, here's her. Okay. I just found it.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Let's see.
Thursday, here she is, Susan Sarandon.
Okay.
This is Susan. I'm honored.
Welcome.
Okay.
That must have been during the COVID when Fallon had no audience.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like Jimmy Fallon there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it sounded definitely like.
Well, we'll let the audience at home decide how they want to say it.
Yeah, you say what you want to. In this context, that we know who we're talking about. There's no confusion. There's no brand confusion. We're talking about Bull Durham. We know who, when you say Susan Sarandon or Sarandon, we know who you're talking about.
That's right. Now, I want to share a piece of trivia that I also have some scrutiny for.
Now, Chris Sarandon is married to the snake lady from Blade Runner. Please,
that's right. That's right. Continues. That's right. I'm going to mark that down as absolutely true. All right, check this out. This is scrutiny because I just don't know something about it. It seems weird. But Paula Abdul incorrectly believed that in exchange for choreographing Tim Robbins' bar dance moves, she's in the credits for this, she would get a line or two in the movie. When told no such deal was agreed upon, Abdul marched off the set screaming, according to Ron Shelton. Now, maybe that's true, but that just seems that seems insane to me for some reason. Yeah. She was younger
especially
then.
Since it was a scene in a bar where they're doing some dancing, they could have easily had her be a barfly who gets a line or two. Right. So that would have changed nothing.
It wouldn't have been any big deal, so I don't know. I feel fishy about that one, but still, it's also my favorite at the same time. So I guess thumb up, thumb down. I don't know what you do there. Well, there you go. Should we do some clips about this film?
You got clips from this film? There was hardly any dialogue. Oh, wait.
There was tons.
There was some brilliant dialogue.
Oh, right. There was. For example, we get a little line here. Oh, that's weird. Let's make sure that worked. Yeah, it worked. So you get this, for example.
I believe in the Church of Baseball.
She believes in the Church of Baseball. Well, I would go there.
There's a lot of believing in this this movie.
Yeah,
Scott, I would go there too. Just imagine how long the service is there.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, we have a Church of Cannabis here in Denver.
Oh, I'd go there too.
Yeah, I went there. Okay,
all right. I'll go to one and then the other.
The stained glass is really cool.
Is it? They have stained glass?
It really is, yeah.
Is it like big like weed leaves and stuff like that? Or what is it?
No, it's a former church, a former real church.
Yeah.
And they just left the stained glass in there, and it, for whatever reason, still looks like.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Like it kind of fits with the Church of Cannabis.
Wild. Here's something about a left nut.
Million guys give their left nut to be in your shoes.
Oh, this is a sad story, actually. That coach guy, the manager, he died like not long after filming from a... He was only 40, and he had a brain aneurysm out of nowhere and just died. It's awful.
No.
Yeah, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole on that guy.
That's the Nathan Arizona, right?
Is that the same guy?
You're talking about a different guy.
Is that the same guy? They're similar. I certainly could see if it's not him,
I could see
how you could switch the two.
They could be him.
Yeah. It could be the same guy.
Trey Wilson.
Yeah, Trey Wilson. Yeah. Is that same guy?
Yeah, same guy.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, my gosh. That makes me even sadder then, because he was great in that. My name ain't Nathan Arizona.
He was in Twins. He was in everything.
He was, he's an old-looking 40-year-old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't look at him and go, oh, he's younger than Susan Sarandon by 2 years.
Right, yeah.
That's really weird. Sarandon, whatever. Let's do this one. This is something. Oh, it's a baseball hit, and I just like the sound of it. Ooh-ah.
Ooh-ah.
Yeah. Got a little ADR out there on the field.
This movie has a bunch of little things that are intended to give you a broad view of what's going on at a minor league baseball park, but really could have used just a tiny bit more explanation. And the one for me that really stood out was the radio announcer adding sounds to the call on the radio.
Yep.
Because it just felt like,
okay, there's a story here. You know, I really want to know, why is this guy like, is it because the team isn't really doing it? There's no crowd, so he's adding crowd sounds.
Well, okay. Dunaway, didn't you say earlier there was a reason, or they used to do this when you were growing up?
Well, there wasn't really a reason. It's just that Ron Shelton was around that stuff, so he knew the realness of that, even though it seems absurd.
The reason probably would be is that in a small market like Durham, where you have a lot of local fans who want to hear the game, you have to have somebody doing a play-by-play with, you know, somebody who's getting, it was a third base hit. Okay, third base hit. You know, and then crowd noise.
Yeah.
So it's just for the local audience. They probably
just for a little flavor.
I just wanted just one line of explanation. Right. Like, is this guy remote to the game? Is he like, is he pretending like this is a road game?
And
he's
I'll give you the line.
Yeah, he's a remote announcer for the local Durham fans who want to hear the game, but there's no live feed.
You know what it's
and
like? It's like this.
Back up.
It's like this. Wait. Something's gross.
Gross.
Oh, that's better than me just saying something's gross. Or if I say, boy, that was an interesting trope. That's better than just saying there's a trope, right? Like, I think that's kind of what they're doing. They're trying to give people even more so because there's no visual for these people. And I'm guessing, like, there's lots of radio broadcasts of MLB games now, right?
Sure.
But for a small town game like that, they don't have mics parked out there on the field. They don't have.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly why this is. Because, you've got somebody who's relaying the plays of the game to somebody who can then do the live feed to the Durham audience who can't be there live, and there's no live feed.
Yeah, and they're home going, yeehaw, right?
Exactly.
Here's a laugh. I don't know what this is. Oh, ow, and then a laugh or something. Anyway, here. Oh, I know what it was. They were talking smack behind the bar, and I think Costner said, well, I think your arms are something, but your brain or whatever. And this guy goes, so you way overacted.
Burn, it was like
that was before a zing.
Yeah.
Zing's a burn. Woo-hoo-hoo.
He way overdid it, but whatever.
Yeah.
Here are all the things he believes in. Most of them, anyway.
What do you believe in, then?
Well, I believe in the soul. The small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. The pussy.
Okay, I kept part of it.
Right. Oh, God.
I love that he edited it out and then re-added it. Re put it back in.
Well, I was going to ask you,
like, what about his poultry and felines that he likes?
I warned everybody before we started this. This is related to the content we watch.
Yeah.
Well, and especially in 1988, like this was like him just randomly naming the most, you know, like the most vulgar terms for genitalia. Like that's like, wow, that's impressively R-rated in 1988.
Yeah, I agree. It was. I remember the time. Like I said, I thought the whole thing was doing it back in the day. But that's part of it. Is everything was just like forbidden fruit. My mom would never let us watch this movie in this house.
Oh no!
Like I had to go with friends to see this somewhere. I was 18, but you know, I was still living there. Here's a hee hee hee. I like Hosner's little laugh.
he's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I was also amused, by the way, in his little monologue that he wants to outlaw both the designated hitter, which everybody agrees with, and AstroTurf, which is still being debated. Yeah. Like 35 years later, right now, all across sports, there's still a debate going on about getting AstroTurf off and making everything natural grass.
Yep.
I think that's funny.
Right. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I do love that I believe Pete Rose should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Never uttered by anybody.
Oh, God. Pete Rose at the top of this. They just, how many times did we see Pete Rose?
Oh, yeah. We saw him doing a big dive on home plate.
Yep.
I thought he was flying everywhere.
Famous dive. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, dive. Can I have a quick trip alert?
Of course. Hold on. Let me find the tab. There it is.
If you're going to have Tim Robbins
pretend to be Fernando Valenzuela through the middle third of this movie.
Right.
For some reason, you also have to show me a picture at the beginning of Fernando Valenzuela and his bizarre delivery, because that's the only way I'll make the connection, apparently. And it worked number on me. I was just like, oh my God, like the movie is starting. And I said to Samantha, oh, look, there's Fernando Valenzuela. He was known for rolling his eyes every time he threw the ball. It's like his bizarre thing. Like, how could you do that? But he was like a really effective pitcher. And then the middle third of this movie, Tim Robbins is doing the same exact thing. Thank you, movie. Yeah. I just really appreciate you, movie. That.
We should always have a thank you, movie moment here on the show.
Thank you, movie.
Now, I often get a lot of weird audio from the 80s of Brian asking, you know, going on dates, you know, like prom and that.
Sure, prom and stuff.
Yeah, right. It's usually post-date or maybe on the date or whatever. But I got one today that is you asking a friend who had already been out with the girl so that you could know whether or not you should ask her to prom. All right? And this is what you said.
Is she as good as they say?
Wow, man. Jeez.
Yeah, that's,
That Arliss guy. And that was, remember
that was homecoming,
name.
By the way. It was,
that was homecoming.
Yeah, I was auditioning her for prom.
That was once again Robert Wall doing that. Okay, shower shoe. Oh, this fungus shoes.
Your shower shoes have fungus on them.
Yeah, gross.
It's gross.
It's pretty gross. I could have put that in the list, but that could have been a faked up shoe, so I didn't know for sure.
Yeah.
This part made me laugh.
Get a hit, Crash.
Shut up.
I did like that part.
I do always kind of chuckles a little bit to soften it as he's walking away. But,
improv'd. I think that was definitely improv.
I loved how he seemed to be having a special sort of fun on the field. You know,
He's had some. Baseball experience too, right? Kevin Costner, if I remember correctly.
Well, I don't know about him. Maybe. Who did I say earlier?
The director.
No.
Oh, the director definitely did. But I want to say in the special features of my Bull Durham VHS, which I've mentioned twice already, no one's even responded to. Were definitely talking about that.
Kurt Russell is
going to pretend like I didn't even do it.
I know Russell played, but I don't know anybody else. I don't know if Costner played or not. He might have. Was he like a Triple A?
Kevin Costner was a former high school baseball player. And he actually hit two home runs while the cameras were rolling. So,
did he get a free steak?
Yeah. You have to hit the cow, baby.
There's trivia about that. Did you see the trivia about that, Scott?
No, I missed that.
So that sign was invented for the movie. Mm. And then when they wrapped up, they left the sign. It became a part of the local thing for that stadium. Yeah. And it still exists. It is still
awesome.
A case that the stadium managers have a deal with local restaurants that you're going to get a free steak if you hit
that's
it.
Amazing.
That's awesome. Was there any trivia about the death riots that happened when they had the helicopter drop the cash out from the field?
The $1,000.
Yeah.
I've never been to anything where money was dumped on a field.
I just want to say, if you're going to drop money, I think it's a great idea. Like, but you only have five people run out on the field. You give five people the ability. It's so much more fun to see a handful of people losing their minds than to see 100 people each get crowd. $2.
Beat each other up for it.
Yeah, and then you can cut it down. Say like, well, it's $400 and it's five of you. Go. And then people are still going to freak out because it's just five of them.
We're going to go treetop level with this helicopter. We're going to drop some money out and we're just going to spread that money everywhere with those. This is going to go everywhere. It's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, it's going to be bad. I think I found, this is for us only but I think I found Tarantino's favorite shot of the single shot of the film. There it is right there.
Gotta be feet. I'm sure there's feet. Oh God.
That's that long slow pan where
it was and you're like, what's he doing down there?
Exactly. Like, oh gosh. What are we gonna see here? And it's just he's painting her toenails.
Painting her nails. How dumb. But Tarantino. Woo, got him into movies.
Yeah. All right. Hold on, let me pause this part really quick.
Excuse me for a moment. I need a little privacy.
It's actually the resting state of the trailer on IMDb. Like,
it really is. That's funny.
Yeah. If you're not autoplaying,
the footy resting state.
Yeah. I'm on IMDb checking it out. Leave me alone.
I got to see Bull Durham again.
All right. Here's what's the. Oh, I enjoyed this lost kid thing. It's a small thing in the background, but I enjoyed it. Here it is.
Folks, we have a little lost girl up here. Said
name is Lida Ann Baker.
What are you doing?
She'll be waiting at the main ticket box for her daddy, Dieter Baker. Dieter, come on, get your little girl.
Crash.
Come on, Peter. Come get your girl, Peter.
Peter Baker.
Love
I thought it was going to be Studer Baker. I was waiting for some kind of big joke. There was no big joke.
Oh,
there,
that would have been funny. Yeah.
Studer Baker.
Well, this is all while Costner's writing, I want to F you on a piece of paper and giving it to a little kid.
Yeah, no kidding. Hilarious. I mean, I guess he warned the kid player. He said, don't look at this kid or whatever. But the kid didn't warn the next kid that he handed it off to.
No, exactly. He's like, oh my God, what does let's F mean, mommy?
Yeah.
Right.
Dumb. Here's a fun line.
Dim pretty boy.
Dim pretty boy.
Dim pretty boy.
Dim some pretty boy.
I like
Dim's
it.
Dim's pretty boy.
Here's my adjective, and then here's my noun. here's, let's see. Oh, some of that baseball chatter from Arliss.
Come on, nuclear man. Nobody. Chuck Hockey, you got me.
Such nonsense. I love it. I laughed at this.
Yeah. Stop it.
When you told him to quit playing the guitar in the car. I gave you guys that gift, but him 6'4" Tim Robbins climbing through a bus on the seats is really a shot.
Such a great shot. Yeah.
That's actually how I pick my seat when I get on a Southwest Airlines flight.
I would pay real money to get video. Somebody put a GoPro on behind you or whatever and get Brian doing that. I would pay money for that.
Really?
Oh,
and then him being escorted off the plane. You don't F around on a plane, buddy. We know that.
There's no way.
Is that effing around, though? It's like, you just get on, you tell the
Why don't you F around and find out?
Floor is lava, and you start doing that.
Yeah, you say it's part of your religion. You can get away with anything if you do that.
See how that works out for you.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I would have to use some of that money I'd win to pay for early
another
like
flight.
Basically make sure I guarantee myself A1 access to the plane. Flight group A seat or entrance number one so that I could be the first one on the plane to do that.
You'd have to. I love that.
Oh gosh,
I love the shot.
Because otherwise you've got people already sitting in those seats and they'll be pissed.
They'd be so mad. Can you imagine?
Stepping on some arms.
Someone's going to grab one of your legs or something and yank you over or do something. Yeah. No one likes to be called meat, and this clip proves it.
Listen, I'm sick and tired of you calling me meat.
He said effing meat, but I cut it out.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. But you got to cut out a lot because there's a lot of F-bombs.
A lot of swears, I usually bleep them, but I was lazy last night. I didn't do it.
No, nope, I knew.
Here's Tim Robbins waking up. All right, from his dream there.
That where after he dreams, he's pitching sort of naked.
Unnecessary 2 minutes of this film.
I don't know. Kind of hilarious being Tim. And wow, he's so tan. I didn't know. He must have,
He tanned up for the job. So you never know.
did anybody else get suitably outraged at the blown call at the plate?
He definitely tagged the
Oh yeah,
he tagged the runner, and that runner never even touched home base.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I like when he walked off the runner as if he'd gotten it. It was all the done deal, and Costner is like, I don't know. We're 30 seconds into the argument, and Costner goes, "He still hasn't touched the home plate."
Yeah.
I was really impressed. Like the it was captured in a way that you could definitely follow the controversy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's not easy. That was really impressive.
Yeah, it was great. Here's the announcers that we like.
2-0 Bulls in the second. First time the Bulls been ahead in weeks there, Whitey. Mm-hmm. Let's see if the real nuclear loose will show up.
Yeah, I love it. Whitey just, I feel like I know some of Kim's family like that. They all talk like that. Here's an 80s punch. All right.
What did that side of beef ever do to you?
Yeah, right. Here's the 80s again. Ugh, I can't go on.
You can almost see the steam rising from the manhole cover as the saxophone player slowly enters frame.
I love
can
it so much.
Can anything take you back as fast as something like that? That is wow.
Team Deluxeaway is in the house. That is like the leftovers of the Steve Martin movie Roxanne, which
I love that. Yes, I love
it. But
Roxanne.
I feel like we were getting over it by then, but all these 80, 89, 90.
We still had a couple more scenes. We hadn't even had moonlighting to get through.
Yeah,
Red Shoe Diaries.
That's true.
Clinton hadn't even come out and played on Arsenio yet. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
that's right.
But I don't. Where are we at with the sax now?
I think the Red Shoe Diaries successfully killed the saxophone sex song, I think.
Yeah. Is it dead though? Oh, let's see. Saxophone.
The saxophones aren't dead, but the saxophone love music is probably a little bit.
It's just there's. I'm trying to find something. There's not much to find. But like,
what's the love making instrument now? Is it the violin? What do we do when we have some love
triangle now?
Is it the triangle? Ding, 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 ding.
I don't know. What is now? Like, yeah, if you're having a hot scene,
it's probably be some gently weeping guitars, maybe. What do you think?
That would be the keytar.
The keytar.
I think, that's a great question. What is today?
I mean, there are still movies, obviously, that have those scenes, but they're not as. It's not like let's have a really sultry sex scene. It's like usually some sort of plot driven moment.
Yeah, there's not steamy sex scenes much anymore, right? No. It's just more like hardcore rock'em sock'em. Why not rock'em sock'em love?
Rock'em sock'em. I'm trying to think of the last movie I saw, a current movie that I saw that had something like that in there. I mean, you get some with Oppenheimer with Cillian Murphy and Florence Pugh.
What did DiCaprio get music played when he was in the Titanic steaming up the back seats of that car? What was that?
You guys was orchestrated.
Howard Shore score Shore, whoever that was.
Yeah, but when I think of this sort of thing, Take My Breath Away from Top Gun is maybe king of them all. And I feel like today you just do that. You take a popular song. Or, you know, what's her name? Billie Eilish going, whatever she does.
That's what she does. It's a little more mumbly, but that's pretty much what she does.
Oh, shit. That's terrible. All right. Where the hell were we? Let's move on to, I got two more of these. Here's the end of a laugh. All right, there's that.
Good one.
Yeah.
That's great for like when somebody says something that's really not that funny, you can play that as
It's like, hilarious. Nice thing. Here's something about a dinger.
Hit my dinger and I hung him up.
Hit my dinger.
Yep, hit my dinger.
I was a little annoyed. We had a continuity error there where she was walking home in the rain and sees him on the porch. Her front of her skirt is soaked through, just soaked from the rain. She gets up there.
Are you sure?
Yes. Sits down on the bench. Sits on the bench, totally dries a bone. No problem.
Right.
That annoys me. Give me some continuity, Bull Durham. What the hell? More like bullshit. All right. Oh, I know. Pretty dark. All right. Let's move on to this thing right here. Time for the Film Sack checklist. We'd like to have a weird little baseball kid to pass our messages around a stadium. Check.
Yeah.
Nothing quite like an iron. Nothing quite like an Iron Maiden T-shirt under your Miami Vice suit jacket. Check.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, wonder what Costner. Cost her. All right, that deserves one of these. Hold on. All right, there you go. Star Trek connections. I'm gonna bet that Arliss dude is in Star Trek. So that's my only guess.
I will be the first to say that Robert Wool could have easily played Neelix. In fact, there's probably a Mandela parallel universe where Robert Wool played Neelix. So you'll know when we've made the switch over. You'll remember that he didn't used to. But alas, no cast connections for this movie.
Oh, really? Wow. It's like 3 weeks in a row here. Sheesh.
Yeah, we've got four like deep connections. Like first assistant camera, supervising dialogue editor.
This might be a call for us to do another Star Trek movie. We haven't done one.
Oh, you think when we start running out of connections,
after four strikeouts on Star Trek connections, we have to watch a Star Trek movie.
I think that should be the rule. Okay. Yeah. It lets us know we've gotten too far away from center.
Mm.
How come the clown prince of baseball, that dude's like practically a whole Star Trek race without any...
I was really surprised that this was his only feature film. I really thought...
Love it.
I remember being a kid going to minor league games and like once a year your local minor league team would get the clown prince of baseball and it was like a big deal or gonna go see this guy.
So this guy was he actually a thing like that and he just had
he's the real deal.
He's the real deal.
He would travel around and he would make it to one game a year for like five dozen different teams.
Yeah.
And he would perform. And he would, they would let him perform, at least where I lived, they would let him perform the whole game. Like,
yeah,
he would be out there from the start. And then, like, he's like, when there's an argument at the plate, he comes out and he's the third guy in the argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's, yeah. I like it was that. So funny.
They'd let him come out and spit on himself. That's great. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, totally. They didn't let him. He demanded
it. Gross. All right. Well, so very little Star Trek connections, and that's okay. Soundtrack grading, yeah, give it an A for appropriate for the most part. I think we're sort of gibbit over here on the sax stuff. It just doesn't land for me anymore. You know what does though? Like synthy music in She's Having a Baby. You remember that movie?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
With Kevin Bacon and all that. That is the most synthy soundtrack you'll ever hear in your entire life. And I find that one compelling, and I still like it, even though you don't hear it anymore.
You know, the soundtrack, and this is going to kind of give away my TMS recommendal this week, but the synth music in Elemental, which is a brand new film, but has a soundtrack that feels like it could have come from any decade, blew my mind. It is now my like background music while I'm working jam.
Ooh, I kind of sound now like I need to see that and hear that.
You do need to see that. Yeah.
I like that. We're supposed to watch it with Van this weekend. We'll see.
This movie's composer. Nah, you never heard of him. His name is Michael Convertino. He did a lot. Like he worked, but he never got above this. Like it was like he composed the score for like the Santa Claus and like,
oh, interesting.
That's what I call, it's my nickname for when I'm having a quick chat. I call it a Convertino. It's like, hey,
just have a quick convertino.
Hey, Kim, can we have a quick convertino about
over here?
The groceries?
grab a little drinky drink and let's have a convertino about the, I like that kind of talk. All right, there's that. Now the social media post. Oh, it's a dark day when this happens. So let's do it. It's summon this thing up in 280 characters or less. And I think this week we'll toss the baseball with 118 stitches to Randy.
Bull Durham.
Nice.
Bull Durham. There once was a woman who screwed whoever put her in the mood, but she chose a big dummy, licked his hairy tummy, and made Scott Johnson say,
I was wondering when we'd get a limerick. That's awesome.
This is really good.
Have you done a haiku yet?
I haven't. They're really hard to get across. Like, what's going on when
you have to be told it's a haiku so that you know why you're hearing those words.
Yeah, so we need to watch the movie Haiku and then I can nail it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Make sure you put that in the thing because I want to post that for patrons.
Yeah.
And finally, Dunaway, Brian Dunaway.
And finally, without Ibbots, we go with Bull Durham. Like when Susan Sarandon opens her bedside table of naughty toys and Walt Whitman. You be cocky and arrogant even when you're getting beat. That's the secret. You got to play this game with fear and arrogance. Hashtag the show.
Yeah, the show. Make me want to play MLB the show.
The show.
Let's now swing over to Brian Ibbett.
Bull Durham. I believe in quantum physics. I don't believe in fighting. I believe in a free steak, and I believe you shouldn't sing and play the guitar if you don't know the effing lyrics to an Otis Redding song. And I believe in a free steak.
Nice.
Wait a minute.
Free steak.
Two steaks. Or if you say it twice, it'll make it extra nice. I like that.
Two steaks. And I didn't realize, I did notice that I did it after I read it, but I didn't notice I put free steak in there twice.
It's even better that you kept it. I love it. And I would also go for two free steaks right this second.
Oh, yes, please.
Well, that's all well and good. We now have to talk about these titles. Foley work.
This is Foley work. Hey. Look out.
Yep, I got these titles right here. I just mushed up part of a contract. That's okay.
Null and void.
Here's the alternate titles. It was almost called The Grand Adventures of Nuke and Crash. They thought that was a little too old timey. So it almost and then they almost chose A Woman with No Job Doing It.
Uncomfortable.
She did work at the university, I guess.
Right.
Sure. Doing who knows what. All right. Here is your emails and texts for the week. This is where we do a little correspondence. Filmsack@gmail.com. We got one from Gabby who says, "Don't hurt yourselves when you pick up this this name that I have dropped. But Peter Coyote is a family friend whom I've known since the age of 3.
Aww.
He was just visiting my parents' house this summer. Just thought I would show that out there since you all referred to him in the last episode. We got him confused with the ET guy. I do look forward to the four of you chatting every week. It's so comforting. I try to play 6 degrees of separation each week, and my family seems to know so many people on the periphery of movies. Cheers, Gabby. Ooh. That's a lot of people you just dropped names.
No
just
kidding. People. Yeah,
whole crowd drop. Nice job.
And exactly. next time you see Peter Coyote, let him know. Really loved him in A Walk to Remember. That's a soft spot for me, that movie.
Yeah, I like it too.
And ask him to listen to Film Sack. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, please, and I'll keep listening to every time Ken Burns uses him for like 60% of his documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing voice for documentary stuff. His Roosevelt's one, so good.
I'll send Gabby a set of keys that I'd like to have Peter Coyote autograph for.
Oh, that's great. Have him jingling like that.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I don't want to hurt this kid, but boy, the government's sure stepping in. Oh. Anyway, here's another one. My good sackers, says Matt in Salt Lake City, right here in my hometown. I've been watching classic Hammer horror movies of the 60s and 70s lately, and it occurred to me that you all haven't sacked any yet, and it's kind of hard to believe.
Wait
the closest you've
we
watched,
watched one, didn't we?
Well, he says the closest you've been able to do is The Legend of Hell House, where you got that amazing shit sound clip. I should have that ready, but we know the one. Tubi has several streaming now. Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing playing Dracula and Van Helsing and a few of them. There are also lots of nude witches. All of them are cheesy. None of them are scary, but they all are great, says Matt in Salt Lake. P.S. By the way, I will never forgive you all for watching King Solomon's Mines.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that's a weird one to get to I know. Forgive us for. There's so many other ones that are unforgivable curses.
How many Hammer films we have to watch to absolve ourselves from that?
Probably just one. I mean, have we not done any technically?
I thought we did. I'll have to look deep, but I could have sworn
I've had King Solomon's Mines on my watch list. Hold on just a second.
Well, we saw that.
Yeah. We saw that, but Hammer films are great, and it's a good time to
Hammer
watch
films,
them.
Sure.
Yeah, if you're Halloween's coming up, but I don't think we have any on slate this year. But I certainly wouldn't mind.
But on my watch list, I mean, I'm just guessing because I haven't memorized all of them. But my watch list is littered with movies that are probably Hammer films, like the
right.
You know, like the Brides of Dracula and this kind of thing.
And they're still making this shit. There's one this year.
They're still making this shit. Can you believe that shit? They're still making that
shit. Their 175th film is Dr. Jekyll came out this year, and it's a Hammer Productions thing. The Lodge in 2019.
It's not just, and it's Dr. Jekyll. It's not just like a re-release for
nostalgia. Now, if I do that, let's just go with Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. That's a much superior 1970s.
Yeah, listen who's in it. Directed by Joe Stephenson, written by Dan Kelly. Who cares? Stars Eddie Izzard as the title character.
Okay.
And it's a new adaptation. Hold on.
Should have people tell us what Hammer film is the absolute de facto. There's some that I've seen for sure, but I think we need a little hand holding here, maybe.
Eddie Izzard. I thought he went by Edie now.
Dracula. Sure. Well, I'm sure that stuff you're reading, the stuff you're reading is probably out of date. Dracula AD 1972. I think I remember this. Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing.
I found a list that tries to rank them, and the top five are number five, Plague of the Zombies, 1966. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number four, The Mummy, 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Old school.
Number three, The Curse of the Werewolf, 1961.
1 million years BC, better be on this list.
Number two, The Curse of Frankenstein, 1957.
Yeah, I think I've seen
that. And then
one.
The number one is Horror of Dracula, 1958.
There we go. Horror of Dracula. Horror.
Yeah, no, we need 1 million years
now,
BC.
Now, this
on
sounds
that
like
list
the.
Well.
This, you're right. This does sound like the best of. You got the most intriguing of, the most team, weirdest
team,
of.
Team Gibbet again on that one. I want to see that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. After Which the one? Shawshank Redemption, I want to see 1 million years BC.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Horror of Dracula, 58. Let's see. This is...
Like, I liked Hammer films mostly, like, from the 60s and 70s. That's the stuff I liked. I'm not saying the 50s stuff's not good, but I just, like, that's my jam.
Oh, there it is. Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee. This must be the
Which is no-brainer, because these guys were all over the Hammer films, right? They were...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's hard not
to... Who is... So, Hammer's a producer, right? Somebody named Hammer? Or they just called
Hammer. No, they said, well, it'd be a good. Crunching. They said Hammer. That looks good.
Really? I always thought it was a dude. I thought there was some guy.
There is a guy.
Yeah? Is his name Hammer?
Absolutely. Mike Hammer.
You're making this up.
Solves crime.
Armand Hammer.
Army Hammer. Hammer. Maybe they're related to Army Hammer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Army Hammer's a real dick.
No, it was...
Well, let's move on to this text we got. We got one final thing here. This is a text. 801-471-0462 is where this came. And filmsack@gmail.com if you would rather do an email. Here's what they said. And this is anonymous. I don't have a name. Just listen to your episode on The Flash, and you were talking about bad roommates. I can't remember who mentioned the glass bottle of tobacco. That was Ibbot. With a spit in it, I have a story to add. He says, my college roommate did the disgusting tobacco chew as well. He spit it into Mr. Pibb bottles, and he says this is important, he says. On one occasion, I was at my computer and reached for my bottle of pop, and just before I put it into my lips, or to my lips, I realized that the bottle was warm. Yes, I almost drank his tobacco spit. On another occasion, in a rush to get dressed, I spilled an open bottle of his tobacco spit down my bare leg. I'm still not sure how I didn't beat him while he was sleeping. Anyway, thought you'd enjoy my story. Keep up the good work, says anonymous.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, it's very different than the Peter Coyote one.
Yeah, very different. We have come full circle, Randy. No, we've gone full 180. No, we've gone 180, right?
Yeah.
Not 360.
Yeah, if you're trying to turn, around, you need to go 180 degrees.
Right.
If you do a 360, you're facing the same.
I almost said 90, and I'm like, wait, why 90 degrees?
90, why would you do a right angle? That's weird.
Nobody ever does that. This conversation just went 90 degrees. And what?
I like
it's
that. Still that's
similar.
Good.
It's still similar to the way things we were talking about, but change direction quite severely.
Yeah, in fact, the exact change of direction is now vertical instead of horizontal. All right. I want to mention some patrons. I got some new folks this week and real grateful for these people. And I want to mention their names. Daniel Hall, Lisa Patterson, Justin Onslaught.
I like Onslaught better.
Onslaught's pretty good. Cool. Danielle, Lisa, Justin, welcome to the fray. We have all kinds of great reasons for you to join and a bunch of great people that you're joining in with. We just put up a great host special from Dunaway. You're going to want to go check that out. If you're curious at all about his obsession right now with all things retro, including VHS tapes, and this movie, you watched this movie on VHS, right?
I absolutely did. I got the VCR, got the VHS tape out, and we watched the Bull Durham to completion. It was a lot of fun. Can you believe it?
I can't. You watched it on.
Did you have a bowl of Wheaties when you were done?
I was all out of Wheaties, so I just ate some Fruity Pebbles instead.
But he still threw the bowl.
They're practically the same.
Yeah, he still threw the bowl over this thing and then had sex on a table.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you do a CRT, like a regular old ass TV?
I did. I did. I watched it on my 27-inch CRT Sharp. And it looked great. Someone sent me a DVD / VCR with HDMI out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that was nice, and so now I don't have to upscale or anything. It just upscales it right in the device. I can be lazy. I like being lazy.
Didn't even know that was a thing you could get with HDMI.
I didn't either, but for like 2000, Hootie sent it to me, and I think this is from 2004 or 5.
Early
like
HDMI.
It's a little layer.
Yeah,
yeah, that in that generation.
Very you early dub. Technology. That's crazy. Well, there you have it. Get in there, be a part of it. No commercials. You get pre-show every week. You get those host specials, art prints in the mail, other cool stuff. You just got to sign up now and be a part of the FilmSack extended family at patreon.com/filmsack. Quick note after the show today, before we talk about our next movie, after the show, listeners, there will be, I think, 5, maybe 6 longer than usual voicemails that we've gotten that are just a little too long for the show. And they're also mostly just like, hey, here's a cool idea I had for the listeners. So it's a perfect place to put it. I'm going to stack them all on the back end of the show today. So stick around, listen to these extra calls that we've been hanging on to, and feel free to call in anytime. Go to filmsack.com for more. All right. Our next film will be, I already forgot.
It's 2011's The Cabin in the Woods.
We got listeners at this last week, a couple weeks ago, I think they sent us some
DVDs. It's only been a couple of weeks.
We just got these in. It's also on Max, and if you're like, yeah, but I don't know those people, it apparently has Chris Hemsworth in there, and like Sigourney Weaver has a small role.
I've
heard of those people.
Is a really fun ride. I've watched it several times.
It's back before everybody was pissed at Buffy the Vampire Lady creator, Firefly Whedon. Guy, director,
Whedon.
No, Whedon? Yeah, Joss Whedon. Thank you,
Whedon. Yeah,
I don't see Joss Whedon on this movie.
I didn't,
he directed it, right?
Yeah, yeah,
no, Drew Goddard directed this one.
Oh, he wrote it then. And, didn't he?
And Drew Goddard. Drew Goddard.
You just want him in there so hard.
I don't want him in. I mean, it'd be fine if he wasn't, but I was sure he wrote it. Or he's producer and writer. Yeah, he wrote it. Him and Drew Goddard wrote it together. Okay, there you go. Well, anyway, that's a thing. And it also had a surprise. Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford. Forgot they were in this.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh, you guys.
You've never seen it. This definitely is a... What's the word I'm looking at? I don't want to say the word I think it is, but it's a twist. It's nice. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, this was actually when we first started talking about that, this was the movie I was going to use the Pina Colada song for, because there's kind of a list in there. But I feel like, when Bull Durham showed up, it's like, oh, I got to use it for that.
Yeah. Plus, she'll come up with something rad next week.
I'll have something. Well, hopefully. We'll see.
Anyway.
I can't believe he didn't put me in coach, but I can't, whatever. So on
too
the note,
obvious.
I suppose.
Why do you feel, why do you feel like I should use the most obvious?
No, you need to save that for an airplane hijacking.
Then. Yes, exactly. Put me in coach.
Yeah. I'm ready to slay or whatever. You know, I don't know. I don't want to write it for you, dude. We'll wait for the movie. That's what we'll do. Anyway.
We are recording on Sundays for the rest of Sacktober. I'm really excited to get started on Sacktober. We're like literally October 1st with Cabin in the Woods. And then we got a whole lineup for the rest of the month.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Love this time of year for Film Sack. I hope you guys do as well. And next week we begin things with a spooky tale of Cabin in the Woods. Spooky. Much more after that. In the meantime, filmsack.com. Again, patreon.com/filmsack. Big thanks to everybody who does that. And if you'd like to leave us reviews wherever you get your shows, whatever the directory may be, it never hurts. And in fact, always helps. So go do that. Ooh. That is going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Lollygagging.
We'll see you next week.
Get more at frogpants.com.
The pussy.
Oh, God. Every time. I don't know why that hurts my ears so much.
I don't either.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, my name's David. I'm from Houston. It's about the one about Man on Fire. I don't think I'd ever seen it before, so I watched it after listening to the podcast. And I don't know if y'all missed it or just didn't mention it, but Creasy tries to commit suicide in the film while he's listening to the Linda Ronstadt music, and there's a storm going outside. He puts the gun to his head and pulls the trigger, but it doesn't go off. And that's when he calls Christopher Walken, and he asks, hey, have you ever had a 9mm round not go off. And I think Christopher Walken says something about the bullet tells no lies or the bullet knows the truth or something like that. And I feel like that was an important part of the movie because afterwards, that's when Creasy stops drinking and seems to form more of a bond with PETA. And at the swim meet, the nun says, tells Creasy, you're her father today. And it looks like it has an effect on him when she says that, like he swells with pride or something almost. But anyway, later in the movie, so Creasy carries that bullet around with him now after it doesn't go off. And I think he feels like maybe it's God's way of saying it's not his time to go or he forgives him. But later on, he gives that bullet and a gun to Lupita's dad, I guess Mark Anthony. And that's the bullet that he uses to kill himself. That's all. Love the show, though.
Hello, gentlemen of Film Sack. That is the show. I am Patrick S. from Fargo, North Dakota. I called you last week with a Steve Harwell story because of the of your Mystery Man episode and the Smash Mouth tune. You don't need to put this on the show. I just felt like as a human gesture, I should call back and just say, wow, I had no idea that he was in hospice, Steve Harwell, and I had no idea that he was about to die. I mean, I shockingly horrible timing. It's a totally true story, 100%. But it's still, man. So I just felt like I should say something because it doesn't seem good to leave it on that note. I had no idea at the time that that was the situation for him. So that was really all, like, it's just purely for you guys at that point. And also looking forward to the Flash episode coming up. So you guys take care. Thank you very much.
Film Sack. Hey, guys. About your criticisms and conversations about the, the criticisms and conversations online. Man, I've wagered for the longest that I think there really needs to be a screening process, not to use the internet, but to interact on the internet. If we did that, well, just imagine what it would be like. It'd be a whole lot healthier place to have our conversations, which I think we really need to work on how to do that. And so if there was some kind of test or some kind of screening process to filter out what would potentially be not just the bots, but just people who, you know, you don't know if you're arguing philosophy with this idiot because they're 6 years old. So discuss that if you can find a way to fit that in there. I'd love to hear, you know, the four of you bounce back on this. You know, I know you probably touched on that a little bit through the episode, but have at it, man. That's a little nugget for the sack. Keep swinging. Later.
Hello, Scott, Brian, Randy. It probably gives you a hint on which show I am calling into. Film Sack, of course. Film Sack. Oh, sure. I wanted to call in relation to the Mystery Men episode, because you guys were talking about Steve Harwell, the lead singer of the epic band Smash Mouth. I actually have a Steve Harwell story that, I feel like you guys need to hear. So, many years ago, I was in this cover band, 90s cover band, and, we played this thing called Rib Fest here in Fargo, North Dakota. Yep, it's true. We're real. And the event brings in pretty big acts. And so they had Smash Mouth come in. And we were thankfully in a position where we could open up for them and be a good opening act. Anyway, so we do the show and he's a little off the whole time and whatever. I mean, I didn't think much of it at the time. I was just enjoying barbecue ribs or something. And I, afterwards we were, we were invited into the main tent, the big band tent. And so we went in there and we were hanging out. And the rest of the band was super affable and they were awesome and very, giving. They were like, here's the, like, they gave me a full bottle of Jack Daniels. It was amazing. And so
noticed that Steve Harwell was just sitting down the whole time. And he was just kind of doing this, like, pensive sort of, like, distant stare thing. And so I'm hanging out with the band, and we're talking, and I'm, like, cracking jokes and just kind of, you know, being me. And all of a sudden, he comes, he's just like, hey, you should drink some more. And I was like, okay. So I did, and he was like, started cracking more jokes, and he was like, hey, you should drink some more. And I'm like, okay. And so eventually, after a few of these, he stands up, and he's like, literal quote, you're one of them talkers, ain't you? You're one of them talkers. And he was, like, about to throw a punch. And his band quietly escorted me out, the rest of the band anyway, in Smash Mouth. And they were like, ah. So just wanted to let you guys know Steve Harwell sucks, and you guys are great. Have a good day. Take care.